Welcome to the Global Sales Leader Podcast, your gateway to sales excellence. Embark on a journey of sales mastery with your host, me, Jason Cooper, seasoned global sales leader. This podcast is your go-to destination for illuminating insights and all facets into the sales universe, from cutting-edge technology to transformative coaching, training, methodologies. So, this episode invites the industry experts and thought leaders and innovators to the mic in riveting conversation that will give you golden nuggets of knowledge and inspiration, whether you're a seasoned sales professional, aspirational leader, or someone that's curious about the ever-changing world of global sales. This podcast is tailor-made for you. I know you're going to love it. And today we're speaking with Maya Knights, an industry expert in the area of the omnichanneling retail sales area, and we're talking about customer-centric selling. Hello, good morning, good evening, and good afternoon, and wherever you are in this wide, wonderful, beautiful world that we live in, you are very welcome to the Global Sales Leader Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Cooper. So every week we speak to some phenomenal guests from around the globe in the areas of psychology, coaching, leadership, technology, behavior economics, and so much more. So this is about dedicated to exploring a revolutionized perspective on sales, one that centers around the power of authentic relationships and the role of the trusted advisor. When you think about sales, it's all about that relationship that you can connect with another person. So today I'm joined by Maya Knights, and you are very welcome. I was really excited about speaking with you because we met in Dusseldorf, and I sneaked into the retail area, the VIP area, and I started chatting with Maya, and I just had that instant connection. So I'm delighted to have you on board today.
Thank you so much, Jason. Yes, I remember meeting you, and it's absolutely fabulous. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really excited to be here.
So a little bit of a synopsis about yourself. You're a proven domain expert and leader and extensive industry knowledge within the retail area. I say the retail area because it covers so many different areas and technology that is around that. And 25 years of experience as a journalist, editor, publisher, analyst, research director, head of industry insights and content marketer, presenter. There's lots of accolades to you. Co-author of two best-selling books on Amazon, How the World's Most Revolutionizing Retailer and Omnichannel Retail, and your keynote speaker, industry commentator, and well-established around the globe. Have I missed anything out?
No. Well, recently advisory board members as well, been doing a bit of that, so that's been nice. Yeah, getting to see under the covers of lots of different companies, lots of different software firms.
And you also have a website, retailtechnology.co.uk as well, which is there in the background doing stuff.
Keeping my finger on the pulse, exactly. Yeah, I'm publisher of that one.
So we're going to be talking about customer-centric selling, putting the customer at the core, and how we can do that most effectively within the retail technology space, because I know you're an expert at this. But before we go any further, how did you get into what you're doing? Because I'm always curious about how, where you got into it and where you are now.
So I studied English at university, decided I wanted to be a journalist coming out of university. Found it very hard because I didn't actually do an NCTJ, you know, a national journalist accredited. Mm-hmm. Course. So I ended up copywriting for a firm that did just loads and loads of tech, covered lots and lots of internal tech, like their little magazines and their websites and things like that back in the day. I mean, literally back in the day, desktop publishing that was, you know, on beige Apple Macs and beige little square Apple Macs and things. But I was proud to say I interviewed Henning Kargemann of SAP. I interviewed quite a few famous people, and yeah, did some really, really interesting work with Unisys, if anyone remembers mm-hmm. that. ES7000 servers, that's how far back I go. But that enabled me to get my first journalism job, which led me to editing retail technology, which led to me getting into analysis. Because frankly, you know, tech coverage is a lot to do with, you know, taking the temperature of either the consumer or the retailer or the vendor that supplies the technology. And I wanted to go under the covers. I wanted to see, you know, what's involved in these surveys that you keep asking me to cover as an editor. So I joined IDC, but that's a tech market research firm, bean counting servers and software licenses. It's not a retail market research firm looking at tech. So I swapped and I went to Planet Retail RNGs, now known as Edge by Essential. And that's where I met my, I was Global Technology Research Director there, and I met my co-author on Amazon, Natalie Berg. And that just wrote itself. I mean, she sat me down, she'd written a book about Walmart, and the publisher said, would you like to do a second edition? And she went, I think I'd prefer to do Amazon, which is right on the money. And she said, I can talk about the consumer stuff, because she was Consumer Research Insights Director at the time, but I don't really understand the tech. And I was like, well, actually, you know, Amazon is a technology company first and a retailer second. They were the elephant in the room at the time with all the brands and all the retailers and all the vendors that we spoke to. And it just wrote itself. She wrote about, you know, consumer demand and changes in trend from that perspective. And I wrote about how, so she writes about what they do, and I wrote about how they do it. That led me to meet Tim Mason, who launched Clubcard. Interesting point about that, 25 years, anniversary just gone, 1995, Amazon IPO'd and Tesco launched Clubcard, which was the first mass grocery loyalty scheme. And he was CMO at the time, marketing director Terry Leahy, who went on to be CEO. I think everyone remembers that. And he was deputy CEO. And so he had a wealth of experience. And when he said, come and work for my firm and write my book, it's like, yeah, absolutely. I'd love to learn from, you know, an absolute stalwart retailer who's now. As well. So that was omnichannel retail. Essentially, you know, how to build winning stores in the digital world. Unfortunately, it has tended to mean I'm a bit of a poster child for what omnichannel means, love it or hate it. But that was at the insistence of the publisher. They were like, yeah, we love the fact that it's a Marmite word. It will spark debate. So, yeah, I've had to debate on that a few times. And, doing that and the success through those has led me to do all sorts of things. So I think we're bang up to date, really.
Wow. Lots of eclectic backgrounds there. I'm fascinated with that.
Always analyzing. I mean, I think when you read my awful LinkedIn bio, you know, it's just around B2C. It's how do businesses sell to consumers. And, you know, I went to a conference years ago and someone said, you know, it's all B2B2C at the end of the day. This was sort of moved from green screen to early sort of web-based ordering and so on for B2B companies. And they said, we're all just consumers at the end of the day. Mm. So getting used to this intuitive, always on capability with retail and e-com and shopping, why don't we have that capability in terms of, you know, ordering for stock and all those kinds of other things as well? So it is all B2B2C. So I think, you know, wherever we go in this conversation, you know, retail will have a bearing on it. But I think it's our evolution as consumers that's really kind of moved the dial in terms of how we sell.
So when we talk about that and the technology there, where does the person stand and how we can effectively communicate with the end user? Because we are talking about customer-centric selling. How can we get that and build that relationship with that end user? Because I'm curious about that from maybe a technology standpoint. But I'm also always intrigued about how we can actually get that one-on-one as well with a person as opposed to a piece of tech.
One thing I hopefully known for is reducing things. And I think that's where the research background on top of having, you know, covered the subject for so long helps. And I would say that, you know, technology has always allowed businesses to know their customer and do business at scale.
Yeah.
when it comes to retail, you know, it's one of the world's oldest professions. Merchants, go back to the greengrocer, the bank manager who would know you. That's all we really want as consumers. I mean, I think it's definitely not me, but I often quote it that Paul Kobe said it, who launched BA's Terminal 5 and then went to John Lewis. He was their CIO for a very long time. That nothing in retail changes. It's just our means and ways of accessing it. And if you think about that and extrapolate it to consumers who are, you know, the relationships, whether you call them clients or whomever, it's nothing's really changed in terms of what you want. You want a personal service. You want to be recognised and paid, possibly rewarded. If you're a continued loyal customer, you know, the more frequent you are, the more you want to be recognized, the more you want to be incentivized. And technology allows you to do that at scale, and at the heart of that is data and how you use it.
Because the data is good, and you're probably better expert and positioned than myself, but it's really understanding the data, but also feeding it back to the customer so they feel good about what they've had or been delivered, or the interactions there as well, because we all connect with people and brands they like, trust, and can connect with. So the more connection that we have and the more loyalty that we have, going back to the Cialdini's laws of influence and persuasion, I'm not sure whether you know of that, which is the foundations of connecting with that client and customer. But loyalty plays a massive part in that customer-centric approach to engaging with them. Because I always like the people to people. And I think the technology should back that up as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So in answer to that, simply, it has to be people, process, technology in that order. You have to, so many companies make the mistake of putting technology first and getting sort of a little bit dazzled by bright, shiny things. People, process, technology in that order. What do the people need? What processes do I need to develop them? What technology do I need to support and enable that? I've always said, going back to that sort of two sides of the same coin, 1995 pivotal moment, Amazon taught us how to sell using technology and digital. Clubcard actually taught us how to use data to sell us more of what we want.
Yeah.
Right. So I always suggest that when you're looking at the data, you have to look at the sources, but you also have to be really, really clear about what you want to ask, what questions you want to ask of it, what you want to know. And I would suggest that the absolute root of that is knowing who your customer is. I think for a long time, retailers have been very lucky not to have to care who their customers are. But with the sort of increased and accelerated post-pandemic adoption of digital, they have so much more data on us. Even from a B2B standpoint, there is so much data swimming around about, you know, the transaction and the relationships related to that transaction, whatever it might be, whether it's billable or, you know, just one-off or on invoice or wholesale, whatever it might be, there's so much more data about it. You've got to be really, really clear about what you want to know, and you really want to know, not just know your customer, but know who your best customer is. That's what I learned from Tesco's and Clubcard. Know who your best customer is and use that data to go out and find more like them.
Yeah.
Use that data to run your business better for it. So I'm going to streamline my business just to serve those bit, and then I can make a tactical decision as to whether or not I want to go and acquire more customers. And then I have a better sort of roadmap as how to incentivize frequency and loyalty in those customers by matching what I do or adapting what I do with my best customers. I think that tends to be the biggest sort of challenge, I think, for retailers or for any businesses. It's really identifying what questions you want to ask of it. I would say, for example, if you look at retail and take sectors, you know, does a shirt maker need to know your inside leg measurement? Probably not. Grocers tend to need to know quite a lot about you because, you know, you buy a vast variety of different types of goods from them. But I think maybe from a pure B2B standpoint, you are engaged in something that is very direct. And so you can actually be really, really, really laser focused on what it is you need to know about that customer and need to identify that best customer. And then you can start to come up with ideas about how to nurture that customer. That's got to be, you know, the way forward in terms of the way technology is used at the moment.
So using technology now, and like we know that AI has been around for a good few years now, and I think Amazon were maybe at the forefront of that because they're recommending something else that you just bought, which is something else that maybe your friends have bought as well, and using the AI in there. And I know LinkedIn have been using it for a while. So how everyone's talking about it now, and there's lots of scare things going on, but I think it has to have that human-centric approach to it. So what's your opinion on how we can utilize AI to make the customer-centric approach even better? Because you talk about Razor, like focusing in on the best customer, but how can we use the latest AI or whatever technology that we have to improve that?
Ooh, that's a big question.
I know it's a massive question. It's a massive question that's always been on my mind.
So if I take a step back, I would say you referenced Amazon's recommendations, and that's really early cross-sell, upsell, kind of quite basic. I would suggest, Amazon's always gone for the lowest hanging fruit. I wouldn't say they are necessarily the most innovative company out there now. Things mm-hmm. like social media and TikTok and selling online, selling socially and so on, really in terms of immersive and engaging, using immersive engaging content, using really complex algorithms to serve you that content. I think it was only about last year when people were jumping up and down and saying, oh, Amazon's putting video, they're putting live streaming, they're putting shopping, live shopping on there. And it's like, yeah, okay, but, it was very basic machine learning. And it's, that's kind of like the baseline. Amazon's taught everybody the baseline in terms of what customer expectations are in terms of choice and convenience and ease of search and even display mechanisms, the three bars at the top, all these kinds of things, the page furniture that we're mm-hmm. really used to when we visit websites nowadays. It was kind of established through businesses like Amazon. But where we've got to now, and I think the reason why we're talking about AI so much more is we're talking about, in retail, I tracked AI then sort of becoming more predictive, and that's where we got to there, and that's where we are in terms of forecasting and replenishment, and in the supply chain, you're seeing that being used a lot. I would say in the last 2 to 3 years, in terms of B2B or B2C, we're seeing AI used more in customer-facing functions, client-facing functions, helping to manage and triage customer queries and helping service desks, for example, the rise of the chatbot, for example, on or click to talk as another example. But now it's generative AI, and that's what, ChatGPT, that's what everyone wants to know about. And I think we're starting to see that being used in a very productivity focused way. All I can speak really, really authoritatively to is what retailers are going through right now across the world. And wage rises, wage inflation versus cost of living crises means they are really having to make some tough choices about workforce efficiency and how automation can help to balance that. That's like a little bit of an equation equals no drop in level of customer service or potentially, increasing levels of customer service using different types of technology like chatbots, for example, would differentiate on levels of customer service. So, and with generative IT, AI, you can see some really good advancements in terms of the quality of imagery, the quality of tagging, metadata, accuracy, for example, if you're an e-commerce company. I always say, the final thing I'll say is that right now when it comes to predictive analytics and generative AI, it will help businesses move faster, do business faster.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
At a potentially lower cost. And I'm afraid that does mean that we are going to have to rebalance some of the more manual labor intensive tasks with some robots and some, you know, some automated systems. But I think where it has the real impact right now is at that management level to enable companies to manage by exception. And that goes back to my point about technology enabling you to do business at scale. So yeah. you train AI models to be able to tell you where I should be looking across the world, whether it's my freight system in my supply chain or my replenishment systems into stores or whatever it might be. I think that's where it really has the power to revolutionize, as well as in terms of from a customer facing perspective, what you see, how you see it, how you know, the quality of that customer experience, and when you're interacting to try and sell something digitally, both physically in person as an aid and self-service if you're online or on mobile.
And I suppose the technology behind the scenes will just make things more efficient and streamlined and cutting time down. And I was just, while you were speaking, I read an article many years ago about 100 years ago, people were knitting, and probably a little bit longer than that, they were knitting stuff and in a clothesline, and then they created these woolen mills, and everyone was panicking because it would cut down the jobs and it cut down everything else. But what they did was make things more efficient by doing it on bulk and the scale. And everyone had that scared approach to that. And that was 150 years ago or whatever. And technology just keeps moving on, and everyone panics because something else should place in something else, but there must be something else to create more jobs on the back of it, wherever it's more, well, you have the bots, then you have get past the bot, then you do speak to a person, which is from anyone's perspective is you do need to speak to someone some stage. Absolutely. And carry on that relationship forward, which is, I think, it's the most impactful thing that we can do once you get past the technology, is to speak to a person.
Well, the fundamental question there, Jason, is that where is AI going to top out? Is it going to become self-conscious and and take over? I think right now AI can't give you an opinion.
Yeah,
it really can't give you an opinion. And I think AI is always going to need, I remember Google saying, we're using the most sophisticated AI algorithms. But they then sort of say it's human-assisted AI. They call it human-assisted AI. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, it constantly needs a human to either review its results or to constantly train the models. I mean, I was having a conversation with a friend the other day, and we were saying, well, if you could train a neural network on the world's most powerful quantum computers and just let it go and ask it, I don't know, something like Douglas Adams, what's the meaning of life, and come up with better than 42.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, isn't it?
Yeah, it might take a few years, but it might come up with some interesting questions. We are at a bit of a tipping point. I think, they say the tipping point for AI development is going to be at 2042. I can't remember the clever person that said that, but we're on our way there. But right now, I think we always expect things to move faster than they do, but we really need to look at how they can help us with efficiency and productivity, and triage from a customer experience perspective, so that you can find easy answers to questions automatically. Mm. But if you need someone that needs an opinion and you've got a complex problem, that you are directed to a person that's knowledgeable about your issue as quickly as possible. And just from a fundamental perspective, that means if I call your call center and you transfer me to another department, no, I don't want to do all the security again. No, I don't want, know your customer, and have one view, single view of the customer. It's absolutely essential. So hopefully AI can help do that in terms of basic database matching and things like that, and syncing up systems and helping those human beings in call centers and in stores and in warehouses or wherever it might be that you're interfacing with clients. Do business a bit better.
I agree. And I've been working with a couple of call centers as well on not with their technology, on customer centric stuff that we're speaking about at the moment, people to people. But on a larger companies, they have older technology in place because it costs so much more to do it, and then it comes out of date so quickly, and people want AI, and they have old systems, which is old, and it talks to another system, and it talks to a third system, but they don't really speak to each other. So I think that's where the frustrations is from a customer perspective, is you pass the pillar to post when it should just be that one stop.
Yeah.
You speak to someone and they have all of the information in front of them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think, yeah, legacy, technical debt, they are real issues. I've been engaged in discussion online on LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn most of the time. About how grocers, they, you know, margins are so thin for grocers, but don't think people realize it's like 1-4% for the big four over here. They currently spend about 1-2, maybe 2.5% of their revenue on IT, and they really need to be spending more like 5-6% on IT. I think the other point about that discussion was, you need to invest wisely in a downturn in order to hit the ground running when things get better. And it's, you know, the use of technology in that respect in regards to selling stuff, it has been really, I mean, it's become even more important post-pandemic. You really have to know your onions in that respect. And I think now is a really, really key time to look at how to deal with those legacy systems. There's some interesting, you know, I can get really noodly and talk about technology architectures and architectural approaches in terms of microservices and API based. I mean, we used to talk about service-oriented architectures. We're talking about middleware now. You know, there are ways of doing things. Another principle is, you know, cloud, something, looking for something that's cloud native. And really when it comes to sales and B2B to C, it's headless. You want to be able to abstract those systems of record, those systems of that actually have quite a lot of technical debt and involve quite a lot of friction if you try and change them. Abstract them using a middleware layer to headless systems, which are cloud native, run by APIs, and they're kind of like widgets, and you can hopefully try and swap them out a bit more easily. So you have your base website, but you want to add click to talk, and you want to add, I mean, we've been doing it for years, but I think we need to start thinking slightly more sophisticated terms in terms of selling B2C, in terms of you know, how are we going to abstract that to a native mobile app so we can really serve our best customers device frequency. And we might need, depending on your need and what your customer's looking for, we might need geolocation, we might need, we can use all of those bare metal native qualities of the mobile to create more immersive experience and use things like AR and use the geolocation capabilities of a phone to be able to map a space. And you know, that's got amazing potential from a trades perspective in terms of construction, all the way through to selling furniture to fill homes, to fill buildings. I think, you know, it's known as MAC, and it's microservices, API first, cloud native, and headless. And I think that's the way to approach it. But when I've spoken to retailers that are looking at this, people like Lego and IKEA, they are talking about the fact that they've been very realistic, and they're saying their systems of record are not going to change. The SAPs and the Oracle financials of this world, these are enterprise scale systems, are not going to change. But at the back end in that respect, there's a lot of pressure on those companies to modernize and adapt, and they're slowly doing so. So they're extending out into the middleware with microservices and APIs. You build your middleware layer, you choose your middleware layer, whether it's, it could be anything, but if it's a data repository, like a customer data repository, for example, and you abstract, and then you use your analytics on the back end to know your customer there, or it could be a front-facing system, which is your website, for example, or your B2B ordering system, and you're adding more and more functionality and capabilities from a headless perspective on a point, on a best of breed point solution capability, because they're cloud native and they're API enabled. That's the way I see companies getting around it. But I think, coming back to my original point, that's complex, right?
So it is, yes.
Realistically speaking, companies really need to look at technology now, less as a cost center and more as a profit enabler, and really understand where they can get, they can win money back, do business better, do more for less from a sustainability standpoint as well.
Yeah, of course.
Back end, and then really make that customer experience on the front end as slick and as seamless as possible.
Because it's all about the front end. I know that there might be a few bumps in the road on the back end of it, but the most important people are the ones that buy the products and services from those particular companies, and the seamless and the best service and the best interaction they can get at the front end, as opposed to the technology end, the better. As long as the technology works and supports and integrates easy, because people just want to keep it simple, really, at the end of it. They just don't want that. Question I always like to ask is, if you were interviewing you, what sort of question would you ask you now?
Very good question. I was once asked, and I often pose this to people, and they actually stop and like cock their heads and wrinkle their brows, just like I am doing now, and think, it makes them think hard. So I'll ask you the question, Jason. If you were a merchant, B2B or B2C of any type, and you were given the opportunity to start a business from scratch today, but there's one condition: you can only start as a brick and mortar company, or you can start as an online only pure play company. Which would you do?
Oh dear, that's a challenge, because I've done both actually. Many years ago, I did work in retail. Many years ago, and
well, it could be anything. You know, it could be selling widgets to widgets.
That's a difficult question to answer. Really, I'd like a bit of both. Really. I know that we're a bit of a cop-out, really. I'd like to have a bit of both, because I'm a people person.
That's dodgy, the question. I've always answered it after a lot of consideration. I would open the store first. And people are very surprised about that, considering I find particularly shopping an absolute faff, which is kind of what feeds my passion about improving customer experience, full stop, bottom line. I would open a shop first, because that's the best way to build relationships, to understand what's most important. And you could, you know, open the shop on day one and open the website on day two. That would probably be my way around it.
But yeah, I think that would probably be how I would do it. Yeah, exactly. Because I like people. I like the interactions with people. Yeah. But then I want to make sure that the experience on the back end is the best possible. So we can use all the latest tech. And I'm sure being a bootstrap, you can probably find tech that works in the interim up until you make revenue, and then you can build into the back.
Yeah, exactly. There are so many tools out there for startups as well to be able to help themselves. So many freemium type tools, from, you know, operational till systems, ordering systems, stock systems, QuickBooks, whatever it might be, right up to, you know, generative AI tools to help you make a slick website. So, it's all to play for in that respect. I think, going back to a point about, you know, how much you should be spending on technology, you really need to think about it as an enabler. And I think the important thing as well to remember is, I think going back to the triumvirate of people, process, technology, we've always said, you say it's complex. I always liken it to a swan, you know, looking graceful on top for the customer, but probably paddling crazily under the water to get from A to B. But when you're hooking together lots and lots of different systems, the important thing to remember is you need three things. You need to know, who am I selling to? What is it that I'm selling? And where is it that I'm selling it? Particularly if it's a physical good, if it's a service or a subscription or a billable service, then, you know, you need to keep track of different types of inventory metrics, and margin metrics. But those are the three tenets, and that's where the data, those are the three buckets the systems of record data stream should fall into. And what you do with it after that, the questions you ask of it after that, are going to determine, you know, the winners from the losers, as they have done for the last sort of 30 plus years.
Yeah. There's you said the power of three then, which is a linguistic way of making things quite easy and simple, and the SaaS technologies have taken on that. The politicians have taken on that, and the presenters of the world always takes the power three. And I think it's just hugely powerful. Just keep things nice and simple. And I was reading in a book the other day on decision making, and they were saying when presented in a retail store, if you keep things quite simple, it's really easy for the brain to make a decision on a purchase, and that's online as well as in the physical stores. Grocery markets are probably slightly different, but there was a study that I read about, I think it was Lidl or Aldi or one of them. What they did, they just wanted to do everything for the customer. But once they simplified it, it made it so much easier for the people to buy easily and quickly. Mm-hmm. And I think once you have that approach to that, and might be going off a little bit of tangent here, but that's just the way my brain works. But I'm fascinated from your perspective.
Well, I mean, it reminds me when I was writing Tim Mason's book. It was great watching the dynamic between him and Sir Terry Leahy when we sort of did a double-headed interview with mm-hmm. him for the book. And he spoke about the fact that he noticed sort of in the early 90s in Tesco's, people were kind of confused. There was so much choice.
Yeah.
And he admitted that that was kind of from ad-funded bloat. Mm-hmm. So many brands wanted to, you know, get the best position and add their range and so on. You could get 40 different types of something, and people were at the shelf edge, just paralyzed, confused, especially when you think about, you know, labeling systems and the quantities that they use, which differ vary wildly. And so they went through a massive range rationalization, and they had to use the data that they collected from CubCard in order to guide that rationalization process. Mm-hmm. You know, not everybody is lucky enough to have loyalty data, but I do notice the trend that if you have loyalty, they're doubling down, and if you don't, you're launching it right now, because mm-hmm. that first party customer data, client opted in data, is gold dust right now, you know. But flipping that, I think, you know, I regularly get asked to talk about Amazon, particularly at results time, and I've noticed, you know, more and more of their retail business is relying on revenue and margin from their ads. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we are getting again to that point. I say Amazon's kind of slightly eating itself, which is kind of what Tesco's was doing in the 90s with offering customers too much choice, in terms of just being kind of a bit hungry and greedy for serving us ads all the time. How are they measuring whether that detracts from the customer experience? You know, there's a very good Washington Post article from sort of September or so last year, where a guy did a comparison, you know, went, used the Wayback Machine and looked at mm-hmm. a search for dog beds about 5 years ago and a search for dog beds on Amazon now. And the very first thing was an ad for a $270 dog bed. And he said, there's no way I would ever want to buy a nearly $300 dog bed, but because someone wants to pay loads. So I think you've got to be really, really careful how you start to use that technology. We're seeing people talk about retail media a lot, and, you know, using that first party data a lot. I think if you're going to be customer centric and you're going to use that data to purely improve the customer experience and not look for new lines of revenue from it, that's probably the best place to start, because then you are nurturing that customer relationship and strengthening it and encouraging frequency and loyalty and always part of the consideration set. That's whether you're a brand or you're direct to consumer. Then maybe you can start thinking about, you know, extra revenue streams on top of that, but using that data to sell us more of other stuff from other people. But
yeah,
you know, that I think right now is still the jury's out on in terms of how that actually affects the customer experience. But in terms of recommendations, in terms of personalized browsing experiences, personalized home pages, geolocated home pages, if you don't have purchase history or browsing history, all of that stuff's absolutely available right now. There's no excuse for you to be able to use it, not to use it.
I always think, as we've discussed a couple of times, keep it simple and easy to understand, and so presented at the forefront in the customer's eyes, easy, and whatever happens in the back end happens and make that process as seamless as possible.
Well, I think the other thing that's emerged with all of this sort of digital, you know, noise that we have to filter now as human beings is that we want customers, we want as clients or customers to be able to do or find what we want to as easily and as conveniently as possible to access it. And then we really want to know that what we want some reassurance that what we're buying is the right thing. And that's where I don't think we can ever replace people. You know, the shop assistant coming and saying, "Oh, you look nice in that dress," or the client review meeting where you sort of show them the art of the possible in terms of what, you know, their other stuff is being done with other clients. And so, yes, you have to then apply that information to giving them more of what they want. Yeah. Essentially, look for, I think one of your questions maybe think, you know, look for what are the challenges, what are the pain points. So I talk about knowing what they want and giving them what they want, but that's also got a lot to do with looking for bottlenecks, looking for dropouts, looking for any kind of friction that yeah. causes sales erosion, essentially.
Yeah, no, I totally concur with that. So how can people find more about you, Maya?
Oh, on LinkedIn, Maya Knights. And retail technology, retailtechnology.co.uk. Yeah, they can find my details, contact details there as well.
And your books, again.
Ooh, I always say the Amazon one, I've said, you know, the subtitle is incredibly long. I think it's running there. But I say Relentless, Revolutionize Retail and Amazon. You'll find it, all the R's. And then Omnichannel Retail, How to Build Winning Stores in Digital World.
That's been absolutely awesome. I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation today. And you've educated me as well, because that's the way I run this podcast, is to feed it forward and share some golden nuggets of insights and knowledge so people can apply that to whatever they do.
Yeah.
As well. So that's the way I always look at running these podcasts as well. So thank you so much for today.
No, thank you. Found it fascinating. It's been able to cover some quite big subjects and big topics, but hopefully keep it simple, keep boiling it down to what's important, which is, yeah, knowing and serving your customer as best as you can.
Thank you once again.
Thanks, Jason.
Thanks for listening to the Global Sales Leader podcast. I'm your host. Everything that we do in the podcast explores facets beyond the boardroom, delving into personal development, professional development, leadership principles, and the interaction of technology in humanity. So the Global Sales Leader podcast is just a podcast, but more than that, it's a dynamic hub for those passionate about sales excellence. Join us each week for thought-provoking conversations, actionable insights, and front row seats of the future of sales. So if you want to find out more about me, please check me out on my website, jasoncooper.io, or email me at jcooper@jasoncooper.io for phenomenal training, for phenomenal soft skills, and the excellence in coaching.